always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this? And we're live. Welcome everybody here to the Lakers Lounge Podcast. I am Anthony Irwin, Senior Lakers Insider, as well as lead Lakers content creator for Offside, joined on this kind of gloomy in my end Thursday Same. Afternoon by your own Weitzman, who wrote a couple of things of note. You can see it behind him there, a Hollywood ending, which is behind me, or which is always behind me in my picture, if you guys are paying close attention. And that gave you some pretty good inroads in writing your latest piece, which details the Lakers' efforts to become Dodgerfied. Yaron, how you holding up?
I'm good. Dodgerfied is a good word. I hadn't used that one. I should have worked that in there. That's pretty good.
it's exactly what, you know, I think a lot of Lakers fans have been hoping for is some of the stuff that you wrote in your piece for Yahoo. And I'm looking forward to diving into that. A quick reminder before we do, please hit that like button, please hit that subscribe button, turn on notifications for the show, turn on notifications for YouTube, so you get the notifications for the show. And then if you guys are listening in the morning via podcast, please hit that subscribe button wherever it is that you get them, preferably on Odyssey, but I truly do not care. All right, so let's go ahead and dive on in, and just to offer some background here, obviously everybody who hasn't been living under a rock knows that Jeannie Buss sold, and the Buss family sold the Lakers to Mark Walter, who represents Guggenheim, and you now have this cross section of sports legacy brands in LA, between the Lakers and the Dodgers. He is somebody who is very clear. He also owns this group, also owns the Sparks as well. So he's very clearly trying to become, you know, James Dolan West, you know, and
well, I would say clearly identify that sports are a growth in area, right? That's, I would think I would put it right. Yeah.
Well, I mean, anytime you have in American pro sports, right, there's no relegation. There's kind of this, you know, floor level of what these things are going to be worth moving forward. And then in the case of like the Lakers and the Dodgers, you know, given the points in history that he bought them, there was an insane amount of potential for growth. Right. He identified all of the meat that was left on the bone, for very different reasons, but all the same. And it's led to, at least for Dodgers fans, easily the best stretch in that franchise's history. And now for Lakers fans, let alone for fans that are of both teams, they're kind of hoping, all right, when's our turn? When do we get to this? And it was funny because I was talking to Raj on the show last night about this subject a little bit. We were kind of, you know, alluding to your piece. And I was like, yeah, I forget if it was the last World Series or the World Series before it. And Raj was like, man, that would be nice to try to remember which World Series is the one.
Leading into each other. It's hard to separate. As I got my my Mets mug over here. I'm just wondering what it would be like.
All right. I'll try not to bring it up too much then. I feel like Yankees fans feel worse about the Dodgers than any other.
Well, they became like, the Yankees, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, in the, like, it's wild to see on Twitter Yankees fans being like, they spend too much. I'm like, where are we? I guess so, you know, Lakers fans are sitting here waiting for when this is actually going to start. It started a little bit, right, in terms of some of the impact that Mark Walter and his group has had on the Lakers. But we're starting to see it really turn up as we head into this offseason. So, you know, if you don't mind, in writing this piece, what would you say is the most notable difference in covering the Lakers for your book, Hollywood Ending, and now covering what the Lakers appear to be turning into, where would you say is like the most stark contrast between what the LeBron era was like and what the Luka era appears to be heading towards?
It's a great question. I mean, I can make it personal and say nobody's threatened to sue me yet. So that's a big difference between the two eras. No, I mean, listen, the reason I was threatened to sue is because one of the notes in the book, and it connects to it, right, was that, I forget even the phrase we use, bare-boned operation.
That mom and pop.
Family, mom and pop, which I always kind of push back on the mom and pop part, even though I think I use this in the story here, but just that's reputation. Mom and pop make it seem like this was required, right? That that the finances were in a specific place, that the Buss family did not have the money to spend on other things. And my understanding mixed with my belief is it was more choice. Like that wasn't true. That was more of a decision they made. I mean, they made a lot of money off the Lakers, almost the Dodgers. And it was a misnomer that, you know, you'd hear often that this isn't their primary business. They're not like hedge fund people who have the $1 billion elsewhere. I should have looked up before I came. I forgot the number. The way the trust was set up, the Buss family trust, they were all getting paid. They were like money. They were all making lots of money individually. They were like basically salaries, for lack of a better
term. They had salaries,
off of, but these were not salaries like, oh, you make $80,000 a year. Like they were dividend. They were making lots of money. So the idea that, you know, if the Buss family and specifically if Jeannie authorized the spending of money on Ty Lue, right? Authorized the spending to get Ty Lue to be the head coach in 2019, that would have, you know, put her in the poorhouse. Like that's or not
so,
correct. Know. Yeah. Those things are not accurate. These were decisions they make. And the reasoning for these decisions were all been all over the place. Sometimes it'd be, well, that's not how you're supposed to run things. Sometimes it'd be, well, we're the crown jewel and we, you know, if we do this, it's not fair to the league and we care about the whole league as a whole. Sometimes it'd be, we can't afford, just, it was all over the place. Long-winded way of saying, I don't think, and we're just starting to see now, but I don't think that's going to be the case. If you want to put LeBron era versus Luka era, Luka is going to have, it seems like, the greatest possible resources around him. Right? Doesn't mean it's going to automatically translate to winning, but to me, one of the more interesting things learning, I'm a baseball fan. I've never reported on baseball, so I don't know the inside stuff, but one of the interesting things reporting on the story and talking to some people around baseball and who know Andrew Friedman and stuff like that is they were saying, and fans will push back on this, but one of the things the Dodgers have is, yeah, they have the big checkbook and they get people to come that way. But more on top of that, players know that the Dodgers are going to get the most out of them based on their medical staff, performance staff, things like that. So again, easy to say that when you can open up the huge checkbook and say, come play with us. Like, yeah, maybe they're not going to choose. They'll choose money over that. But my understanding and what these people are telling me is that's been a major selling point for the Dodgers. So the Lakers, like that, forget even selling point. It's if you have the ability to help players get the most out of themselves. And I didn't go into the piece of this into the piece, but I think JJ Redick, from what we know, is probably a really good match for that sort of infrastructure in terms of his curiosity and how he likes to apply numbers and his, you know, his, I'll say intellectual curiosity again, right? Like that, I think that's probably a really interesting match and one that could bear a lot of fruit.
Curiosity, I think, is a great term to use here because the Lakers had become so insulated. They had become so, They appealed to the tradition fallacy more than probably any other team in the league. And that is inherently non-curious. That is inherently, nope, we are steadfast in what we believe we should be run. There is no, what would it look like if we, and which is ironic because at one point they were ahead of the curve, right?
Yeah.
At one point they, you know, Showtime transported the sport to a completely different, you know, realm of entertainment and pace. And
I mean, Jerry Buss, like he was probably like, you know, not exactly. Jerry Buss was Mark Walter, right? Like he was like, when he bought the team, it was there's a similar parallel. Again, I don't, the spending all that, but a similar idea that no, we're going to do things radically different. You're leaving. There's untapped potential here that you're not getting into, and I'm going to do it. I'm going to use it.
This is often what happens with teams or businesses that get passed down to the kids, right? Where the father was the one that really thought out ahead of the curve. And then the kids operate with how daddy would run this? What decision would daddy make? And it's like, eventually you got to stand on your own 2 feet and try to get out ahead of the curve in the ways that your dad did. So I find all of that really interesting. As far as like the baseball thing, it's funny the way that this all kind of played out, because you know, whenever I would talk before Mark Walter officially bought the team, I would always kind of say on the show, man, it would be nice if Mark Walter bought the team. And I say that because, one, I'm a Dodgers fan. And then, two, early in my career, I actually covered the Dodgers as Mark Walter was kind of taking over. And I covered them during their search that eventually yielded Dave Roberts. And the way that they did that was so different from how all of the Lakers people have been hired, right? Like, Dave Roberts was one of like 20 something people who were brought in to interview when they went through, I think, like 4 or 5 levels of interviews. And there were, and the people who they interviewed, there are coaches or managers who went on to win World Series in their own right, you know, and other people who kind of, you know, have had success, even if it didn't result in a World Series. And you compare that to, like, you know, JJ Redick, who was identified extremely early on as the guy that they wanted to hire. And then, yes, you had like the Dan Hurley thing that happened. But it was really kind of a 2-man race, you know, at most. And then, you know, Frank Vogel was the like 4th choice that they had when they hired him. But even there, that was like they tabbed Ty Lue, and then Lue wanted a little more money than they were willing to pay. And Monty Williams move on to Phoenix, so they didn't really get the opportunity to hire him after the Lou thing fell through. And Jason Kidd was the guy that they really, really wanted, but they were reluctant to hire him because of his legal issues in the past. So they were like, all right, Frank, I guess you get the job. There was never like a process that could be repeated or has been repeated in hiring coaches. And you compare that to how the Dodgers did their thing with Dave Roberts, let alone the results that we got from Dave Roberts since. And it's really kind of interesting. And you know, you also talked in a second ago and in the piece about like this revitalization of the Lakers, rebuilding them, and I guess the question I have is, do you trust that Rob Pelinka is going to be the guy at the middle of this for the entirety of this process?
That's a great question. I guess I'll answer like this. I'll give a few bullet points, put it all together. One, I have no idea, which sounds more vague than it's meant to. So like, say one, I don't know. Two, all indications are, I put this in the piece, and all indications are that there's no, I'll say this, and I'll hire someone else tomorrow, right? But there's been no indications of them talking to anybody else or thinking about anybody else or anyone replacing him. I mean, Pelinka's involved in this search for, I'm sure we'll get to these with these assistant GMs and other executives. Plink has evolved. He's more than involved. He's leading it. He's leading the interviews, things like that. He's telling people, he's making calls to, you know, front office agents and stuff like that. He's saying he's working in collaboration. He got that contract extension before the, and there was a title bump, right? It moved from GM to president of basketball operations about a month or two before the sale went through. There are lots of people who think, you know, that was sort of, but the timing's not coincidental that he gets that contract extension before the sale goes through, right? That might have been Jeannie Buss looking out for him after all these years together. What I will say, though, is that there are a lot of people around the NBA who are sort of waiting for, like, wait, this is the guy they being the Dodgers, Andrew Friedman, and like, this is the guy they're going to choose to lead them forward. Like, he doesn't seem like, so when Mark Walter, I mean, I'm telling you, not telling you anything you know, Mark Walter takes over the Dodgers 2 years later, wants to get a new GM, basically says, get me the best guy, I'm going to pay him. Who's he gets Andrew Friedman, right? Like, get me the best. Like, that's what you do. And there are people say if they're following that
collection,
path,
frankly, of the best. It was like,
correct, Andrew Friedman, correct.
It was Farhan Zaidi, it was correct. Alex Anthopoulos, and
correct. Yes, exactly. Exactly. It was like, just get me the best. So, you know, it sounds like they mean people are saying that's Rob Pelinka. He's going to be here and say that's Rob Pelinka. But that's only like secondhand people speculating, who basically asking, not even like speculating based. I heard of this is saying, oh, it doesn't make sense. So as far as we know, Rob's the guy. I mean, I'll add this, like, I put this in the piece. I thought it was an interesting note. Player agents, like Freeman and them are not talking to the, like Andrew Freeman, the Dodgers people, they're not talking to player agents. So Reeves contract extension or free agency and whatever Luka wants, like these are not it's not like Luka's agent's on the phone daily with Andrew Freeman, right? So that stuff's still going through Rob Pelinka. So yeah, we're all kind of saying this is going to be interesting, but as far as anyone can tell now, Rob Pelinka is still the guy.
Yeah, one thing that I find kind of telling in that regard, as far as, you know, the league whispers and league speculation, and I think more importantly, action. If there was real confidence that Rob Pelinka was going to be the guy, then people would be signing up to, like, lining up to work with Dodgers 2.0 in the NBA.
This is the thing. I'll cut you off. This is the thing, right? This is these two GM assistant GM jobs. They're having trouble filling it, it seems like. And the best explanation I can get is that people are worried that I'm going to tie myself to Rob Pelinka and he'll be out in 2 years. But again, if you, like, there's no – I can't figure out any – it doesn't seem that that's based off any anything other than a guess. Like, it doesn't seem like anyone's hinted that. This is some tea leaves reading, right? The tea leaf reading.
It might
that's
be a great opportunity. Like, it might, like,
I know, honestly, yeah. That,
people are like passing on it. Like, you know, if you think you're qualified enough for the game,
you can make the leap, right? Like,
opportunity.
Yeah, make leap up four slots that you wouldn't be able to otherwise, right? I'm kind of with you, honestly. Like, if it were me, I'd be like, okay, you know what? I'll go be Rob Pelinka's guy with the Dodgers and. Best case with the Lakers, I keep saying Dodgers in LA, and best case it works out great. You know, like I'm kind of with you on that.
Yeah, it's all really interesting. So you mentioned, I don't know if you did this on purpose, but you just said in a couple of years Rob Pelinka might be gone. There's been a lot of there's been a lot of speculation around the league as far as, like, you know, Genie being allowed to run things for some amount of time, whether that be 3 years after the sale, whether that be 5 years after the sale, somewhere in that window. And that, like, 2 year time frame, I don't know if you did that on purpose or whatever it might be.
That was made up, Mark. I threw a number out there. Yeah, I'll say that. Okay. That was me guessing. Again, no indication. That's what I'm saying. From anyone I've received, not even me being like don't aggregate me type of guy. Like, I have no indication at all that Rob Pelinka is on thin ice, even, right? Other than people just saying, don't they want somebody else? That's it. But that's all I know. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I guess like in some of the conversations I've had, the speculation is centered around, I never know how to use that phrase, but centered around, you know, Jeannie Buss's timeline here.
Yeah.
Cause Rob Pelinka very much is Jeannie Buss's guy, right? Like, he is the only head of basketball operations that Jeannie wants to employ. Mm-hmm. And for, like, fair reason, right? Like, obviously, the ties back to Kobe, but he also was the architect of a team that won a championship, and he also went out and got Luka freaking Doncic last year. So, like, at the
end, she trusts him. You know, she trusts him, which I understand.
She really does.
The armchair psychology, it's easy to make fun. She went to war with her family, her literal brothers, you know, about the team. It's understandable that after that, you surround yourself with people you can trust. I get that.
And so I think part of what I wonder the speculation is going on is whether, you know, people are just kind of waiting for Genie's time to come to an end. It might not even be Rob Pelinka specific. It might just be, all right, well, when Mark Walters' people are fully running this and Genie Buss is no longer there to be kind of Rob Pelinka's shield, does that change who is running the Lakers at that point? And You just said you I guess you haven't heard much on that front.
Yeah.
It's all really complicated because, like, even people who know a bunch about that sale wonder, like, wait, where did that clause come from? Like, what and why is it only Genie Buss of all of the Buss siblings who get to benefit from that situation? I mean,
that we can guess a little bit, but that one, you know.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, I assume. It's funny because after the sale went through, I used to say, and this was after the book came out, so I wasn't able to fully dive into this, was like, we never got a full explanation as to why Genie Buss sold the team. Everyone kept saying, well, $10 billion valuation, you can't say no. And to me, that was just, it rang hollow. For one, you know, people misinterpret valuation doesn't mean you're getting that much in cash. Walter already owned, what was it, 27%, whatever. What, like, the amount... They made lots of money, but she was not getting a $10 billion check. I think the number is probably closer to three, whatever it was, which again, I know, like, it sounds, it's only $3 billion. The other thing is, like, Genie Buss doesn't need money, and Genie Buss has no kids, and it's not like that she needs a generational wealth. We never got a great answer. The best answer, though, and I think to answer your question, the best answer came in that Baxter Holmes story, which, and some of the stuff I alluded to in the book, but he kind of, it was almost like a unintended epilogue to the book, right? And just, there was some of it where she had issues with her sibling, her half siblings, I should say, and clearly wanted, was fine with them being out, as we learned after they get fired, right? So the answer, I think it was just like, I want to keep the team. Like, why was that clause come from? I don't have to sell the team. I don't need that. Like, I can keep the team. So if you want to buy this team, I want to stay here as governor for X years, and you got to agree to that. Otherwise, I can keep it, you know, status quo. That's what I'm guessing it was.
In reporting for this, I'm curious if you kind of, in talking to people around the league, what the reaction has been to the sale and the Lakers becoming more modernized and stuff. Are teams nervous? Is there concerned that they'll actually be able to pull this off? Like, where do you have the league at in response to this sale?
Yeah, I think I'll say nervous. I think people are kind of, the vibe I've gotten is since the sale, right? It's sort of like, oh, if they figure this out, then like, not that we're in trouble, that's too strong, but like that, this is what the Lakers fully optimized could and should look like, right?
Yeah.
And they've sort of skated for years on, we're the Lakers and we live in LA, and you put the Lakers on your jersey, on, you get to wear the name Lakers across your chest. I mean, like LeBron, we always say he chose the Lakers. They didn't do anything. He chose the Lakers because of what Jerry Buss built, right? That's why LeBron ended up in LA. It wasn't, had nothing to do with movies or any of that. So, you know, he wanted to go wear that Lakers uniform. And again, I think I put this in the piece. I don't remember if I did. But I remember asking somebody, like, what's the model? And the person, it was a baseball person. The person goes, it's the Dodgers, right? Like, it was like, what does this look like? He's like, it looks like the Dodgers. If this works, it looks like the Dodgers. The current iteration of the Dodgers, where we're going for a three-peat, first one in 25 years, and baseball might institute a salary cap for the first time ever because they feel like this is a way to limit us, right? Like, that's what this would look like fully optimized.